Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy International Multiple Sclerosis Day.
Oh, boy.
I know.
May 30th. Not one to celebrate, but.
Yeah, indeed. Well, May 30th creates an opportunity to boost awareness of one of the most common diseases of the central nervous system and connect those afflicted with MS to resources and improve support systems. MS, it turns out, impacts more than 2.3 million people around the world, according to the MS International Federation. The term multiple sclerosis relates to areas on the brain and spinal cord after myelin covering our nerves is damaged or dies. And a damaged myelin leaves a lesion behind. These lesions are identified by an MRI when symptoms begin to appear. Excuse me. The disease is unpredictable, progressive, and challenging to diagnose. Make matters worse, the cause is unknown. And while there's no cure, treatments are advancing to help slow the progression and reduce its symptoms. I have two high school friends who died from MS complications and a third who's lived on well into her 60s now with the help of life-extending meds. So I remember each of them today.
You know, I know quite a few people. It surprises me there's only 2 million people with that around the world.
Yeah.
Now that's to me, that's a pretty low number considering how many people we have. But and I know quite a few. I probably know five people who...
You know a lot of people.
Well, you know, just... And I'll tell you, one of them I know had a very... It was very bad. She's in very poor condition. Two of them you wouldn't even know. I mean, they look healthier than most people, but I know diet and exercise is a key component to keeping that at bay. And, of course, a lot of these new medications and so forth. I think there's a lot of experimental drugs and so forth for that. So, yeah. It's a very, you know, difficult disease for sure. Gold today. It's gold. I don't know, maybe it's moving on the thought that we'll be in war pretty soon. That's what I'm thinking. Gold was up 16 off the high of $20 for the day, though, at $1,960. Silver is up and down, but we're holding at 23.28. Platinum was down $3 at 1,031, and palladium was down $4, 1,439. The USDX today was down 0.20 at 104.06. Crude oil was down, hit below 70, 69.76 for crude oil. Paper markets today, well, the Dow was down 50 points. The S&P was pretty much unchanged. The NASDAQ was up 41 points. Oh, is this an advertisement or something? I just saw something about Social Security. Americans over 64 can get additional spending with a new flex benefit. I think that's an advertisement. But anyway, it's a Social Security thing. And $900, that's a lot. Let's go ahead and go to Europe. Europe was negative across the board. Asia was positive across the board. 10-year yield was down 0.12 at 3.69. Natural gas was also down almost 4.5% at 2.31. It's just interesting to see how low will natural gas go. It just amazes me what they've done to that. And
for some of these dealers, gas stations, I think the Memorial Day holiday couldn't have come faster as oil has gone down. At least in my area, oil's gone down, and now it's under $70. Yet the price at the pump is probably 20 cents higher than it was 2 weeks ago. So a little more profit sharing at the retail level, it seems, probably based on increased demand.
Yeah, that. And I think it depends on where oil was at when they actually purchased it. I don't know if they buy in real time when it's actually being delivered or they, you know, but they oil, big companies, they probably.
There's a lag.
There's a lag. Yeah, exactly. So I think I did all the, give me 3 days off and I think I did all the, everything that is important as far as the metals and so forth. So a good day in gold today. And so we'll take it for after a 3 day weekend. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this on Friday, how the economic data shows a pickup in consumer spending. I don't know if this is going to tell us that I saw today that consumers' credit card debt's now over $1 trillion. But it seems like the economy is still going hotter than expected, although a 1.3 GDP is not a, I can't consider that a hot economy, Dave.
It's not killer.
No,
that's for sure. But but consumer spending, which makes up 70% of the economy, just keeps surging along. I think that's what they're pointing to when they talk about, you know, the economy staying hot. The headline is a tad misleading.
It certainly is.
This aspect of it, perhaps.
Yeah, because what they're spending it on is health care, insurance. You know, they're not out there buying stuff.
Well, they started buying new cars again. That's up over 6% over the past month. So actually over the past year, I believe. Yeah, that number is an annualized number. Go ahead.
I was just going to just touch on this briefly. The Fed's preferred gauge of price increases also showed resilient inflation. The PCE index, excluding of course, you have to exclude food and energy costs, rose 0.4%. So that ticked up a little higher than in March. Anything else in there, Dave?
Well, everyone is saying, remember that even though on an annualized basis, the PCE is down to 4.3% now, you know, still more than double the Fed's 2% target. The fact of the matter is, I think at some point, of course, this is just an educated guess, but that I'm educated guessing that come a year from now, maybe 18 months, inflation should get below 4% and maybe even to the mid threes, but I have a feeling that's going to be closer to the new normal. And even then, we know that in many respects, it's understated, if not woefully understated, depending on you know what measure you're using and how it's being measured. In the short run, though, the question is, does this set of newer numbers affect what the Fed's going to do? It's June 14th, FOMC policy making meeting. You know, this recently is, well, certainly 3 weeks ago, maybe even two and a half, over 90% of Fed funds future traders on the CME were expecting a pause. And the other 9% or 10% thought there might even be a 25 basis point cut. And 91% of the futures market pricing implied, you know, a 91% chance that the Fed's target rate would be lower by December. And as of this afternoon, it's 36%. So certainly a lot less confident that the Fed's going to hold rates steady. As we've been talking on this program, Melody and I and Butch just think the Fed can't help itself. It's obsessed. It's impatient. Its continued insistence on hiking after hiking after hiking, I think the chances increase that the recession that's coming is going to be deeper and longer. So I don't know. Let's hope that I'm wrong. One, that the Fed pauses its hikes in 2 weeks. Two, that what it's done so far isn't going to be too traumatic on the economy down the road.
Yeah, but you know what, Dave, even if they do pause, what does it really change? You know, it might do a pause for the paper markets and things like that, but what does it really do? I mean, it's not going to do much. It's just the idea that it's going to do something. It's not really in reality going to do much if they pause, you know?
Well, if you isolate 1 month, no, of course not. But I mean, what could happen in that month after, or 6 weeks until the following FOMC meeting, is that you could start getting signs with the government reports and other private sector reports that may, in fact, show more tightening than they think, or that the numbers suggest. I'm not trying to spin that. I'm just trying to say that rather than take us one step closer now to financial trauma, just chill the heck out for 6 weeks. Let some more numbers come in, And then go from there. I just don't know that this Fed has it in them.
It'll all be based on the stock market. I mean, that's what they make their decisions on, I believe. You know, and you know, the thing of it is, you know, we were going to talk about how wages are playing a big part. So they actually want folks to make less money. They don't want them to make any more money, because they want to use wages as a way to fight the inflation. And I mean, it's like, you know, you have to fight what's really causing the inflation, and they're not going to do that. They're only adjusting these rates and everything to, and you know, the strength in the dollar has a lot to do with the, there's a lot of things that they're doing other than just the rates that are making, you know, inflation seem tamer than what it was. But again, we talk about all the, hey, what's important? Healthcare. What's important? Food. So we've seen gasoline drop. Yeah. Used car prices. That's what they're using. Is that correct, Dave? They're using used car prices to determine?
Oh, sure. That's one of the big metrics.
So they're using something that has gone totally stupid to use that as an inflation. I mean, it's just, so how do we know? The point is we have a problem. And all they're doing is they're not addressing their problem. They're only trying to cover up the problems. And, you know, so, hey, if they can get a few extra months or maybe an extra year of before the whole thing goes belly up, hey, more power to them. More power to them. And, but yeah, I mean, even the Fed chair Bernanke and another chief economist, Blanchard, he said the Fed might need to do more to cool down the labor market before prices are under control. This was a paper presented at the Brookings Institution, you know, and I'm no fan of Bernanke as a senior fellow. I mean, he's just all part of the problem. He created part of the problem. He did a great job to the problem, you know, but, so, you know, he attempts to settle the debate over what caused the most recent bout of inflation, you know, and he talks about wages. So wages went so strong, Dave, that that's what they're blaming part of the inflation on. So if they're going to fight inflation, that means they're going to have to reverse that part. Is that what they're saying?
Yep. Yeah, it's sort of Orwellian. You know, the theme I see flashing at the Fed building: layoffs are good. Bring them on, private sector. Wage cuts are good. Bring them on as well. And it's ironic. I mean, we were talking last week about, you know, investors' reactions, stock investors' reactions to these massive layoffs, and, you know, how last week when Meta, Facebook parent Meta, announced, 13,000 more layoffs, mm-hmm. that their stock share price went up 7%. Yeah. It's like, go figure.
Well, I could see why, because, you know, management is taking control and blah 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 blah. But I mean, the overall effect of all of them, you know, it has absolutely no impact at all, negative or positive, to you know, the markets and so forth. That's what's just so bizarre, or the economy. That's just what's so bizarre. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, these guy Bernanke, saying that headline unemployment have to go from 3.4% to 4.3% to get inflation back to 2%. I'd like to see that statistical model.
They haven't made that one up yet.
Well, that's there. There you go. It's the Biff-Barf analysis. We call it the way we see it, and if we don't see it, we make it up. But you can't discourage job seekers. Again, very misleading headline unemployment number, woefully understated. I mean, even their 4.3% suggestion translates to a more accurate 8.1%. Using general methodologies by the BLS. That translates into job losses for a lot of people, hundreds of thousands more.
And that's good news for them. Anyway, I hear the music, and I guess that's good news for us to some degree for a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with Dave Allen, and we did a little bit of time traveling in the break today, and we'll have to share that with you someday, but... It's amazing what we do during these breaks, isn't it, Dave?
The mind wanders sometimes.
It does. Well, you know, I think everybody is following this story about the debt ceiling, and the bill to raise the debt ceiling was negotiated. Anyway, it's passing its first major test today in the House Rules Committee, where two of the panel's nine Republicans have already signaled they will oppose bringing it to the House floor for a vote. The Fiscal Responsibility Act is a product of a deal that was released Sunday to cap federal spending for 2 years in exchange for Republican votes to raise the debt ceiling beyond next year's elections and going all the way into 2025. Now, the bill needs to pass the GOP majority House and Democratic controlled Senate before June 5th. When is June 5th? Next.
Next week.
Good enough.
The second is Friday, so fifth Monday. Must be Monday.
Yeah, and that's when the Treasury Department projects the government would unlikely to have enough money. There's a block of at least 20 conservative Republicans have attacked the compromise bill. accusing McCarthy of caving into the White House. Several prominent conservative groups are also opposing the bill, Dave.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I come into this program today not real confident that this is a slam dunk. In fact, I mean, it get, what do they need, 218 votes? It might get just that. You've got disaffected members of both parties in both houses, particularly the House, which has a lot more factions among its members than the Senate generally does. The House Freedom Caucus, very displeased. I think they've got to be part of the 20 Republicans that you just mentioned. Got a number of Democrats, the so-called Progressive Caucus, that are very unhappy. I think the middle, for the most part, in both non-extremists, I hate using that word, but I think that's how Biden and McCarthy get to 218. Votes scheduled in the House tomorrow night. The Rules Committee, House Rules Committee, was to meet. I don't know if they have. I haven't seen any news on that as of now. I know that two of the nine Republicans on that committee had announced in advance that they were not going to approve sending it to the floor tomorrow. So in a sense, the drama continues, although, as you would say, Melody, it's just a matter of time until the final vote comes in, the debt ceiling. It won't be technically raised per se. It's actually going to be suspended this time for 2 years. That, they say, gives the Republicans an ability to say, well, when the debt goes to $34 or $35 billion, whatever it's going to go to in the next 2 years, well, we didn't vote for that. So I'll have more to say about the debt deal in the third segment, Melody.
Yeah, I mean, it's just shameful. It really is.
It's performance. It's not even good performance.
I know.
It's see-through performance.
I mean, you know they're going to do it. They're going to take it down to the bottom. They're going to take it to the wire. Because I just don't think they're ready to default on it yet. I do believe that the debt's too great to be paid. And there will be a day of default. I just don't think it's this time. And, you know, because, you know, I don't know. They already had their little deals already made, and so it's just anyway. Don't get me started. I don't really want to go down.
Oh, I already did. Come on.
No. Home prices rising in March. They were 0.7% higher than March of 2022. Craig Lazara, he's the managing director at S&P DJI, said 2 months of increasing prices does not make a definitive recovery, or a definitive, whatever. But March's results suggest the decline in home prices that began in June 2022 may have come to an end. And with the rising, I don't know, Dave, if rates drop, yeah, you're going to see those home prices move back up, I think, considerably.
Yeah.
But
yeah, for sure.
That's the question. That's what's really, I think, moving the housing prices is the rates. But
yeah, it's a very challenging period, and it's more challenging in some regions of the country than others.
But you wouldn't expect to see those prices rise a little bit because of the change in the mortgage, making it easier for lower income people to get in there and penalizing the wealthier folks. So yeah. I would think that would have some sort of impact.
Yeah, inventory is still low. Surprised we're not seeing a higher spike.
The consumer confidence fell in May. The Conference Board reported today that its consumer confidence index fell to 102.3 in May from 103.7. So that's about the fourth time, I think, Dave, in about 5 months that the overall consumer confidence has declined. So.
Consumers in a funk, and yet they continue to spend.
Nothing stops the consumer, the American consumer. Nothing.
Get out of my way. I mainly look at the expectations index. When I tune into this every month, that's the measure of consumer six-month outlook for business and labor and income conditions. That inched down a tad, two-tenths this month. A reading under 80 in this category signals a coming recession. And the Conference Board notes in the report that reading has come in below 80 every month since February last two. So I just have one question for the economy, Melody. What are you waiting for?
I know. Well, just as I mentioned earlier, credit card balance has passed $1 trillion, or it's about to. And the average rate on a new card is 24%.
Wow.
And that's the average. That's huge. And sometimes you don't think the $10,000 in a credit card debt is a whole lot. At $250 per month with 24% interest, you'll be making payments until 2030.
Wow.
And you'll be spending a total of $20,318, twice what you owed. And that's if you don't never use the card again.
Yeah. Fat chance.
I mean, that's amazing. And yet.
We were talking about new and used cars just a minute ago. Excuse this digression. We're in our car and home insurance renewal period. My wife and I, and we've been doing a little shopping, as we like to do. And a good friend who owns one of the insurance companies, a local franchise, suggested we increase our liability. In fact, he thinks we should triple our liability. I think it had a 5% impact on our overall premiums. We asked why, and he said, well, because there are more and more electric vehicles that on the road today, these EVs are getting to be so heavy because of the batteries that they're finding that if they hit you, or especially if you hit them, you're causing a heck of a lot of damage to your car and theirs. So they just said, be particularly aware now if you're knowingly passing or approaching an electric vehicle.
Wow, that's interesting. Anyway, I haven't heard that
sorry
one.
Sorry for that aside.
No, I think that's very interesting.
That was new news for us as well.
Wow. I know. I just changed my insurance to Liberty. I'm not doing a plug to Liberty Mutual, and they were pretty good. Anyway. Okay. So, well, you know, we're talking about expensive things, and this doesn't kind of, it relates to everyone out there who has a son or a daughter that's about ready to get married. And I just can't believe what the average cost of a wedding is today, Dave. And
yeah,
it seems off to me. It seems low.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This week's Levity is Golden talks about, well, at its roots, the cost of love. My wife and I were in Boston 2 weekends ago for our nephew's wedding. And that experience had quite the impact on us in more ways than one. It turns out weddings are roaring back with bigger budgets, longer guest lists, and grander settings. Almost every aspect of it, planning, hosting, attending weddings, is getting pricier. Inflation is apparently really kicking in this category. Even guests are going into wedding debt. Not us, thank you, but the average cost of a wedding today, this is all across America, ticked up from $28,000 to $29,000 from 2022 to 2023. That's according to the wedding planning website Zola, who my nephew and his bride actually used for parts of their wedding. But the average was far higher in some places. D.C., $45,400. New Jersey, $44,200. And Massachusetts, $40,100. Inflation, again, and high demand are driving up these costs. Well, here's how the major cost categories have fared since 2019. And to the current date in 2023, keep in mind that inflation has gone up 14% during this period. While DJs have gone up 25%, so if you want entertainment, you're going to pay for it. Makeup artists up 20%, flowers up 20%, wedding dress up 19%, hairstylists 18%. The lower end, you got photographers up just 8%. Catering companies up 7%, surprising, given the high cost of food these days. Venue rental up 7%. Thankfully, though, the cost of wedding cake is up just 2% over the last 4 years. Plus, social media has infiltrated the planning process. More couples apparently feel pressure to spend bigger to make their events pop. For example, 1 in 3 couples are now looking to TikTok, the social media site, for wedding inspiration. That's nuts. Thankfully, my nephew and his new bride were not among them. Theirs was a good old-fashioned do-it-yourself event, do-it-yourself and bring-it-yourself event. Great venue overlooking the Boston skyline. But guests are getting hit, too. 4 days in Boston at a shared Airbnb, breakfast and dinners, gas, because we drove, a new dress and shoes for my wife, just a new tie for me, touristy stops and a wedding present, $2,000. Glad we don't do that every weekend.
Wow. That is a lot.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. 40% of people who've gone to weddings in the past 5 years went into debt to be there. That jumps to 62% if they were in the bridal party because of wedding showers, bachelor, bachelorette parties, etc. One wedding cost that's declining, attire for the groom. Turns out guys are increasingly opting for a more casual outfit, an off-the-rack suit, for example, rather than a tuxedo. Hey! Someone has to set the tone here, Melody. And that is this week's Levity is Golden.
And you know, there for a while, you have all these destination weddings. I can't even imagine what they cost.
Oh, my gosh.
You know,
at all-inclusive sites and wherever, some in the Caribbean. And,
I know one lady. She's in this country. She's from Iran. She's got the most beautiful daughters. One is in New York, and I don't know where the other one is. So they're very, very financially up there, very stable, very high dollar incomes. They had weddings in I think one was in the south of France, and one is, you know, in Florence up there, and Milan on Lake, you know, something. It's like, oh my, they were truly fairy book weddings.
Wow.
But I couldn't even imagine what the cost was.
Wow.
I can't, we're heading into break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. The Memorial Day special edition of our American Survival newsletter hit the streets yesterday. It features Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin blog called Melt Up versus Deleveraging. And Apothecary Herbs' Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought column on supplements and medications. Plus, I have a short piece on gold hanging tough. Again, you can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com. They're timely, informative, opinionated, and sometimes even a little humorous. I must say so myself, your humble editor. DGScoins.com. Now, Ina Fried and Scott Rosenberg write that every revolution in tech starts with the better way for normal humans, normal, to access computing power. That's from punch cards and command lines to Windows and a mouse to smartphones and touchscreens. AI is poised to be the next leap. Now, one big reason the tech world is so giddy over generative artificial intelligence is that industry veterans see ChatGPT's conversational fluency as a key, one that can unlock the next level in this game of endowing everyday users with digital powers yet seen. They say, think of the hours saved and, in theory, productivity gained if you can simply tell your chatbot to clean up your inbox, change your system settings, or even connect to a printer. The upside is that you won't know how to do those things yourself. Now, that's a downside, too. It also means individuals may end up with less skill and less direct control. A number of big players are already using the power of large language models to make chat-style interaction a key way to interact with their software. Microsoft just unveiled a Windows Copilot that adds a side panel where users can both summon the AI-powered Bing search engine and change a whole host of settings that until now required knowing how to dive into the old-fashioned system of control panels. Microsoft Chief Tech Officer Kevin Scott says, I think over the coming years, this will become an expectations for how all software works. Well, Microsoft is also adopting the same standard for plugins that OpenAI is using for ChatGPT. That means that the chatbot isn't just a user interface, it's also a new platform for developers to create other apps and a new front end for controlling other software. Adobe just announced a new generative fill tool for Photoshop that lets people describe what they want to take place in an area, say put a mountain here or a lake there or remove that object. That's pretty cool. The company sees big potential in using such descriptive commands to take all manners of action. Windows head Panos Panay believes that AI is bringing about a generational shift in computer interfaces. He says it will feel magical. But it's going to take some time for the full power and nuance of AI as interface to emerge, according to Panay, pointing out that it took some years after the mouse before we got to a scroll wheel. Now, Panay described the future where queries made in the chat-based Copilot can stay there or, as might be needed, move into apps in the main Windows interface, adding, we will put it where you want it. Well, some of the computing work making all this AI-based chat happen will continue to happen in the cloud, but for privacy and other reasons, some work will shift back to the device. Magical as it often feels, chat interface comes with its own drawbacks. The empty chat window is something of a cipher, for example. It doesn't provide users with much indication of what it can do or how to use it, and there's no easy way to poke around and get a sense of its capabilities. Tech companies have talked for years about natural language interfaces. Back in the 1990s, you'll remember that creature Clippy. It used to pop up in Microsoft Word when it looked like you were writing a letter or resume and might need some help. But Clippy's abilities were limited by computer's inability to understand all the different ways that humans describe the actions they want to take. It's only with the arrival of these large language models trained on all these ways that computers have reached the point where they seem poised to speak language rather than humans having to learn to speak computer. This is a sign to come. Microsoft bought Clippy back as an emoji in Windows 11 following several years of exile. And what's next? Who knows, right? But some experts expect to see chatbot-like interfaces showing up all over the place. For example, once smartphones ushered in an app-centered world, every company and organization felt obligated for a while to create their own app, even if it was just for a conference you were attending for 2 or 3 days. Stay tuned. Hey, Felix Salmon writes that car batteries are like wine fridges. They're never big enough. And that's a real problem for anybody who hopes that electric vehicles, EVs, will help decarbonize the planet and actually reduce pollution. EVs are extraordinarily heavy. I mentioned this in the last segment. And they're large batteries, or the larger their batteries, the heavier they are. That makes them more dangerous, increases pollution even, minimizes decarbonization, and locks in a geopolitical fraught reliance on, yes, China. Hybrid vehicles that are electric most of the time but can fall back to an internal combustion engine when needed are a much more efficient use of battery resources. Toyota, for example, has what it calls the 1-6-90 rule. Its scientists have calculated that the amount of raw material needed to make a long-range EV could instead be used to make 6 plug-in electric hybrid vehicles or 90 hybrid vehicles. They say the overall carbon reduction of those 90 hybrids over their lifetimes is 37 times as much as a single electric vehicle battery. Now, heavy EVs might not have tailpipe emissions, but they still cause pollution from eroding tires, road dust, brakes, etc. They're also significantly more lethal when they collide with pedestrians or cyclists. Thank you, my insurance agent, Bob Hamill. Auto journalist Edward Niedermeyer, no relations to Animal House's Doug, writes, government policy should match a limited battery supply to where it can have the maximum impact for consumers and the environment. That means a lot more hybrids and e-bikes and a lot fewer EVs with 500-mile ranges. Interesting. And now back to the debt ceiling. The debt ceiling can is now all but certain to get kicked down the road for another 2 years. But as Felix Salmon of Axios writes, the underlying idiocy remains. The budget deal announced with great fanfare over the weekend could and should have been achieved at much lower political temperatures. Over the past few weeks, the full faith and credit of the USA was put literally at risk. And if you think that's no big deal, especially in this day and age of moral relativity, well, think again. Unless you're completely invested in physical gold and silver, you would have seen your 401k, IRA, and other savings in less than a nosedive if there were to be a default. The president's top priority became high-stakes negotiations with House Speaker McCarthy, whose own job was in peril if he couldn't deliver something his Republicans considered a good deal. His jobs may still be on the line. When a politician puts his political career and the economic well-being of the country at risk, the natural assumption is that a bedrock and an inviolable principle must be at stake. In reality, though, the stakes here turn out to have been downright picayune. Economic commentator knows it's like a guy walked into a restaurant with a ticking time bomb demanding to blow up everyone if he didn't get a free peppermint. By its nature, the debt ceiling encourages disingenuous posturing by members of Congress who claim to hate the very government spending they themselves already voted for. Most politics is disingenuous posturing anyway, but the debt ceiling needlessly weaponizes such rhetoric and wastes an amazing amount of time and political capital. The more sensible solution, I believe, would be to simply abolish the debt ceiling entirely. Doing so, obviously, would require the votes of politicians who have become so addicted to its ultra-high-stake thrills and all the attention it brings Negotiating to raise the debt ceiling itself is a dangerous game because there's always the possibility that negotiations could fail. And if they would, the government would continue borrowing regardless and put the debt ceiling permanently in their rearview mirror. President Biden, like all presidents, has a constitutional obligation to continue borrowing money to service the outstanding national debt and make other payments mandated by Congress. By allowing the national debt to rise above the level set by the debt ceiling, Biden would be obeying that obligation and effectively preventing all future debt standoffs. The debt ceiling would probably be raised this time around, or suspended, as is the case, just as it has been raised every other time it has been reached. But probably isn't certainly. If you run a debt ceiling showdown enough times, you'll end up with a default eventually. Too Big to Fail J.P. Morgan put out a research note this week saying that the probability of reaching the X date had reached 25%. That's June 5th, according to Janet Yellen. If that's the new normal, then there's an objectively unacceptable 70% chance of some kind of debt default over the course of the next four showdowns. On the other side, if the U.S. successfully manages to continue borrowing and paying its debt, even with total debt higher than the mandated ceiling, that could essentially restore its AAA credit rating from Standard & Poor's and entrench its status as the world's preeminent risk-free borrower. Raising the debt ceiling is a kick the can down the road act, just like selling premium bonds or selling gold. It buys time, but it doesn't address the fundamental problem. Now, breaching the debt ceiling, by contrast, is a one-and-done move. Once Treasury proves itself willing and able to borrow more than the debt ceiling, it need never fear the ceiling again. The Constitution gives Congress the power to make contracts. Sovereign debt experts Anna Gelpern, Adam Levitin, and Stephen Lubin, who added, does not give Congress the power to renege on those contracts. Treasury is bound to pay, they conclude. If Congress does not raise enough revenue to pay for appropriated commitments, then the president's only choice is to borrow. In other words, the president's constitutional obligation to borrow money trumps any debt ceiling obligations not to. The international economic strategy, Patrick Chovanec, said once the debt ceiling has been reached, anything the president does is illegal. A lawsuit alleging the new borrowing was illegal would surely make it to the Supreme Court in record time. A very uncertain outcome. Perhaps not so uncertain, actually. But even if the justices were broadly sympathetic to the plaintiff and found against the executive, the remedy would not be to force the U.S. to default on it. The bottom line, any borrowing above the debt limit would be unauthorized by Congress. But as long as the debt continued to be issued and serviced, many experts say markets wouldn't mind. In fact, they probably welcome a world where congressional dysfunction no longer threatened the full faith and credit of the United States of America. So what do you think? Email me your thoughts to daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. I'll read your comments on a future financial survival program. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch, join Melody tomorrow along with Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.